Hello, and welcome to the Daydream Believers podcast. I'm your host, Liz Chiarelli. Here, you'll find a monthly dose of insight to help keep you motivated, inspired, and informed so you can continue working towards your dreams. We cover a variety of topics from mindset to health to strategy so you can become the person you need to be in order to turn your dreams into reality. Every now and then, we'll also bring in some music artists to showcase some of the finest electronic music out there. Thanks for listening, and remember to head to lizchiarelli.com to download a free morning motivation that'll guarantee you start each day strong and stay on the path to success. Now, on to the show. Hello, Liz here, and welcome to another episode of the Daydream Believers podcast. For this episode, we have the truly awesome Angela Mastro-Giacomo, founder of Muddy Paw PR, hopping in to chat about PR and forming relationships with the people that can help promote us as creatives. Muddy Paw is a tireless, thriving, spirited force with a desire to promote the people and the companies they believe in. Not only that, but they aim to constantly challenge the status quo in an effort to change not just the careers of those they work with, but the industry as a whole. And that is an extremely noble cause. Welcome, Angela. It's really great to have you with us.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
So would you like to elaborate a little bit on that introduction?
I think you really summarized my whole career pretty well. I've been doing this for about a decade. I started off running a music blog, which I still run, called Infectious Magazine. And through that, I started my PR company, and that's been going for about 4 years now. So it's just been a very serendipitous flow of events to get me to this point. But it's kind of wild to think some days I'm like, is this really what I do for a living? Because it's so surreal. It's like so cool. But it is. It's real.
Congratulations. It's so lovely how things flow when you're on the right path.
Yeah, absolutely.
Brilliant. Good for you for going with the flow. That actually leads us on really nicely to one of the questions that Zabizo submitted. And he asks, what made you decide to get into public relations, and how did you form the relationships necessary to realize your vision?
Yeah, well, I mean, absolutely. It was all very serendipitous. So like I said, I started the music blog. So that's actually where I began to build all those relationships. I didn't realize it at the time, you know, but I was building all these relationships with other publicists and labels and indie musicians. So it just flowed really, really well, so that when I decided to launch the PR company, I already had these built-in relationships. And the relationships I didn't have yet, I had spent 5 years in it, so I knew how to build them and I knew how to nurture them. And as for, you know, making the decision to get into PR, it was, I mean, it was kind of spontaneous in the sense that, like, I graduated college in 2011 and I have a communications degree, so it's kind of nondescript, and it was a really terrible economy then. So I kept just getting laid off from jobs that I would get, not even music industry jobs, just like regular jobs. And I got really fed up with that. And so I was still young enough and naive enough that I was like, well, I'll just start a company and then I won't get laid off anymore. And so that was really it. I just wanted to start a company so that I wouldn't get laid off anymore. And because I'd been in the music industry, and because I knew that I could never really make money as a blog in that space. So I knew I had to do something else. And because I had been on the receiving end of press releases so long, okay, it was just like, for some reason, I thought that was enough experience that I could just start a PR career from it, which it wasn't, but I kind of figured it out as I went. And it was really just all very accidental that way. But it's all because I kind of had that foundation and that experience.
So cool. So how long were you doing the blog before you started the PR company?
It was around 4, maybe 5 years. I started the blog in 2009. So it was about 4 or 5 years.
Cool. And how did you spread the word about the blog? So how did you kind of make those connections with the industry people? Were you kind of emailing them and kind of asking them to check your blog out, or were they just kind of finding you through internet searches?
So, I mean, part of the advantage is that I started this blog in 2009. So that God, that's so long ago. And it was a toy.
It is, isn't it? I was like, well, yeah, it is.
It still feels like it was like 2 years ago. Yeah, it was a totally different space. You know, like now there's a million music blogs, which for me as a publicist is great. But in 2009, like there was music blogs, but it was not like it is now, you know? And so that was really beneficial for me because it was a lot easier to stand out. And so there was two things that I did. One was that I sort of worked like a maniac posting news posts. My strategy, and I don't necessarily think it was a good one, but my strategy when I first started was to post like 15 to 20 posts, like news posts a day. So basically things like, you know, band so-and-so has released this new music video, just like generic things that you can find on any site, but that would bring in traffic. And then the idea was that once people are on the site, they would see our unique features like the interviews or the guest blogs or things like that, that would make them stay. And then as far as building the industry connections, I just started reaching out, you know, once I kind of had a presence and I had the blog built, mm-hmm. I would start reaching out to publicists for indie artists and saying, you know, can I interview your artist? Can I feature them? And I mean, the reality is, especially for publicists that are working with smaller bands, they want all those opportunities. So it was really easy to build those relationships. And then from there, I started building it with slightly bigger publicists. And then everyone wants to add you to your media list. And then after, you know, it's so funny, the kind of like big joke in the blogging world is that, you know, you're dying to get on press lists and work with these people, but as soon as word gets out, you're drowning in them and you can't keep up. So that, and that's true. And that's exactly what happened.
Yeah. Yeah. And what would your advice be for somebody who's perhaps starting to blog now, to get that blog out in front of the right people? Would it be a case of, you know, building up a good set of content and then, you know, slowly starting to reach out to other platforms to get features and things like that?
Or yeah, exactly. I mean, I think one of the major things you want to do is have a really, really strong voice. Mm-hmm. There's so many blogs out there that I think what makes people follow a blog is the voice that they have. So, you know, I was always pretty wishy-washy on that, which is something that I would do different, is I always tried to have a really neutral voice. However, I know that even for me, the writers that I enjoy the most or the blogs that I enjoy the most, they have a really strong, distinct voice. So I would get that right. And I would not worry about alienating people. I would worry about just finding your people, whoever that is. Mm. And then, yeah, and then just starting to, I mean, there's so many different ways to network. And I feel like that could be a whole different 45-minute conversation. But
yeah, for sure.
But in regards to the blog, certainly, yeah, reaching out to people, just you know, and this applies to anything. This is a music blog. It could be any kind of blog. It could be any kind of podcast. You know, I think you'll be surprised how many people would enjoy the opportunity to talk to you and tell their story. And from there, you're more likely to get introduced to other people. And it just sort of builds on itself.
Yeah, I totally agree. Yeah, for sure. Ron actually has a question regarding what's the best way to build a relationship with the PR, with PR people, and how should I approach my first contact with them?
So as far as building the relationship, it's not, I wouldn't be too worried about that, because I think the reality is that, you know, publicists want people to work with. So if you're looking for someone to work with, it's more about just finding somebody that has the right vibe, and you want to just be more concerned about, does this publicist, you know, besides all the credentials and making sure that it's a good fit that way, do you guys vibe well? You know, do your stories fit? Do your visions for the outcome fit? And trust that the publicist is also looking for that. You know, they also want to work with people that they vibe with. So, you know, just sort of keeping all of that in mind. And as far as like first outreach, just kind of basic stuff like, make sure you're including all your links, tell them what you want. If you are an artist and you're going off a release, you know, you want something for your album or whatever it is, then certainly you want to tell them what you have coming up. So yeah, just what you have coming up, send them your links and tell them what you want. Yeah. Sometimes I get emails where they're just like, hey, I saw your article and like, I wanted to see about working together. And you just kind of want to establish things in as few emails as possible, you know?
Yeah.
So that's why just having all that information right up front is very, very helpful for everyone.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So yeah, establish contact, establish what you want out of the relationship, and send links, relevant links.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Always, always, always tell people what you want and give them links.
Yeah, yeah. And for, in terms of links, streamable is always preferable to downloadable, isn't it?
Oh God, yeah. No, everybody hates getting, your email will almost certainly get deleted if you attach music.
Yeah.
Everyone hates that. Yeah, yeah, definitely streamable. And, you know, you can, even if it's something that's unreleased, which presumably it would be if you're looking for PR, you know, just upload it to a private SoundCloud link or something like that and send it that way.
Yeah, brilliant. Thanks. Good advice. So yeah, Matthew has a question. So let's address part one first. So how can a PR campaign improve reach for a startup artist?
Yeah, absolutely. So it's just about building buzz. The more, you know, a PR campaign allows you to get out there, get some press. It gives you that visibility with new fans, but it also gives you visibility with industry, which I think people forget about. So there's certainly the element of the more outlets I'm on, the more fans are going to see me. I'm, you know, getting new fans. That's great. But it's also about getting in front of the industry. And, you know, industry, like we do read blogs, we read other people's blogs, we read our friends' writing, we're all friends with each other, so we know what's going on. And it gets you in front of industry so that that helps you down the line when you're doing things like maybe booking a show or a tour or looking at label support or whatever it is. So it's just all about building that visibility, building that buzz, and helping you take it to the next level with building relationships as well.
Yeah.
It's just all in the name of relationship building and visibility building.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting that you mentioned it's not just about kind of getting in front of more people, i.e. fans. It's also about building the artist profile within the industry as well, which I think can get forgotten about by a lot of independent artists who are just, I've got to build my database, I've got to increase my amount of Twitter fans, or, you know, the amount of people liking or listening to my stuff. But it's actually, you know, it's the people in the industry that can open doors often. I mean, yeah, it's really important to have a strong fan base and have that connection. But, you know, we do also need the industry connections too.
Yeah, absolutely. You need the industry on your side. Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Okay, so part two of his question. Is it better for an artist to be focused on a single platform or simply available everywhere to meet as many listeners on as many different streaming platforms as possible?
So both. I mean, you should be everywhere. Like you should be certainly on all the major social media networks, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. You should be on Spotify and YouTube. You should be in all those places. However, there's certainly nothing wrong with, and it might even be preferable to be focusing on one of them, for instance. And by that, I mean like Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.
Yeah.
That there's probably going to be one of those that you're naturally better at, that you enjoy more. And so it's totally fine to cater to that. If you love Instagram, if you're really good at it, it's fine to post more to Instagram, but that does not mean neglect Facebook and Twitter. You should still be posting there with regularity. And it's okay to cross promote the same content because people are in different places. So yeah, focus somewhere if you want, but certainly you need to be everywhere.
Yeah, yeah. And I guess you can, I mean, because you can cross pollinate as well in terms of, you know, if you're building up a good following on your social media platforms, then that you can translate then that into the amount of streams and plays on the online kind of streaming sites and things like that. So it all kind of ties in together.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think there's a lot you can do to build your engagement, but I think where artists get stuck is that they're always trying to find a way, for instance, like, how do I get people to listen to my Spotify? How do I get these numbers up? Basically, like, directing people to Spotify or wherever. But the thing is, if you just focus on the engagement, then people are naturally going to go to your Spotify. They're naturally going to go to your shows. They're naturally going to buy your merch.
Yeah.
So I feel like the focus is in the wrong place. If you're just like, how do I get people to Spotify? That's kind of a short-term vision. But if you're focusing on how do I do this so that it's done the right way and there's engagement and it's high and these fans are super fans, then it sort of feeds into 20 different areas instead of just one. So even though it may feel indirect, it's actually way more direct. And I think that's where the focus needs to be.
That's really interesting. So would your advice be then to kind of artists to focus on letting the public or letting those would-be fans into insights and aspects of your personality and, you know, as if you were really developing and nurturing a new friendship with a new best friend rather than, hey, got a new tune up, listen to it. Hey, got a new tune up, listen to it.
Yes. Everyone hates that. Nobody likes it when it's an artist is just constantly like, buy my stuff. It's boring and I don't want to buy your stuff. So yeah, absolutely. It's exactly like a friendship. And that's why you have to be providing content that's of value to them. That's why you have to know what your brand is. And if you're thinking, well, I am providing value, I'm providing my songs, that's not value. That's self-serving. The them listening to your song should be a byproduct of them being enamored with your personality and your brand. I think, you know, I always kind of use the example of actors. But yeah, if you think about it, people can think about this even with musicians. But I remember when I was younger and I would read magazines and there would be an interview with an actress or an actor that I never really paid attention to. But then you read something about them and you connect with it, whatever it is. Maybe you have like the famous, like you're like, oh, they have like this skin issue too. Or they have wild hair in the mornings too. Whatever it is. It can be silly or it can be like, oh, they also lost their dad and their whatever it is. Mm-hmm. You connect with them in some way. And so then you like them more and you're more interested. And it's the same for an artist. The more people connect with you, the more they're going to naturally seek out your music and your shows and all of that without you needing to ask them. Like if you have to harass people into doing something, you're doing it wrong. It should just be happening organically based off of the brand you're putting out, which is why knowing your brand is so important. And I think it's a step that bands try to skip over because it's hard, but you can't. It will catch up with you.
Yeah. Yeah. So taking from that, your advice to musicians as aspiring artists and creators in general would be to know your brand and leverage that as a way of reaching the people that want you to reach them.
Yeah. It's just about finding your people and being authentic. And that's why when you figure out your brand and you can figure out who your people are, it's so much simpler because you have that template to look back at and think, okay, is this social media post aligning with that? And you can just sort of check in with it. And there's a million great articles out there about this that like give you questions and prompts that you can answer. I also write for Soundfly sometimes, and I did not write this article, but there is one on Soundfly that just came out recently about branding. And it also mentions my favorite TED talk about branding, which is Simon Sinek's Start With Why. Oh, and it just sort of like, it's so good, right? Yeah. And that kind of takes you through it. So I don't know, there's like a million exercises, but I guess my point would be to take the time first and foremost to develop your brand, because everything you do should be informed by what your brand is. Everything from social media posts to the type of merch you put out, everything.
Yeah. Yeah, I totally agree. Get clear on your why. Take the time to get clear on your why. definitely. Yeah, there was another part to Matthew's question, part three. Great question, Matthew. Does the number of plays a track influence its impact on a streaming media platform? And how best should we balance this requirement against reaching more listeners / fans? I mean, I guess that kind of goes back to what we were addressing in the first part of his question.
I'm definitely not a Spotify expert. This is not where my expertise lies. But I mean, certainly I would think it's safe to assume that the more streams you have, the better. You know, certainly if you're looking for things like placements, whether it's an official Spotify placement or not, the more streams something has, the more people are going to be apt to place it because it's sort of proven that it's desirable. So that makes sense to me, but yeah, I'd love to hear your thoughts because like I said, not a Spotify expert.
Yeah. I'm still kind of learning about the whole streaming thing, but I'm guessing that you're going to be pretty invisible on Spotify anyway, unless you're kind of one of the, I think it was a statistic like 7% of music artists are actually like discoverable, as in kind of known, and then, you know, the remaining 93% are like totally unknown. So I think whilst, I mean, this is just my opinion, but I think whilst it is important, obviously, to get yourself on Spotify and be visible, you know, to the public, I think, again, it goes back to what we were talking about earlier, is that, you know, if you become too fixated on, I've got to get 100,000 YouTube views, you know, it's kind of, well, how are you going to get those YouTube views? You know, just buying clicks, or, force feeding your content down people's throats is not how you're going to build a sustainable career. And that's basically what we're wanting as creatives, is sustainable careers. So, I mean, I guess my advice to Matthew would be, like we were talking about just earlier, like build your brand, like know your why, put that out as your social media content, you know, make yourself really appealing to your audience. And then, you know, the streams and the views and the plays will follow, you know, in due course as well. But yeah, I, my advice is to not be so fixated on the numbers and to shift the focus on building the relationships with people.
Yeah.
With the audience.
Absolutely. That's, yeah. I think there's a much higher likelihood of getting, I don't like to use the term getting discovered, but, you know, getting discovered or having visibility. I think that is not going to happen through Spotify, more than likely. You certainly get it. You can get on certain playlists. There are things you can do. But I think it's more in your hands to be, you know, and certainly you can hire people that do Spotify playlists, you know, to reach out to people that do that. But I think your better bet is, you know, coupling that with press, coupling that with relationship building. Like, they all work together. There's no one thing that's going to set you on this path to like being this world famous rock star. Like it's doing every single one of those things and doing it consistently. And that's what makes the difference.
Yeah. Yeah. I think the consistency is key, actually. Yeah. You know, if you're really haphazard with what you're doing, your audience, you're going to lose your audience, you know. And I speak from experience because I took a sabbatical from music kind of about two, three years ago, for about 5 years. And it's taken me such a long time to kind of get back the momentum. And, you know, I've had to basically start from scratch. So, you know, like, yeah, just be consistent. Consistency is key. That's cool. Okay. So actually the next question is from me. And what I'd like to know is, in the absence of a PR budget, what can a creator acting as his or her own PR agent do to spread the word about their projects beyond their email list and social media contacts?
Yeah, so I mean, again, this really goes back to building relationships. I mean, that's going to be the foundation. So if you are doing a PR campaign, which you should be doing, I mean, even if you don't have a budget, then you should be doing it yourself. I don't think there's a way to get around that. I think if you want to have visibility for your release, you have to have a strategy in place, you have to have a plan in place. And that involves knowing the correct timeline and all of that. So, I mean, first and foremost, building relationships, particularly with the press that you plan to reach out to, mm-hmm. and then knowing how to write a good pitch and what to include and what not to include. And, you know, if you're going to be your own publicist, and I actually do think it's very, very valuable for bands to do their own PR campaign, because I can tell you it's so much better working with bands who have done their own PR, because they understand what goes into it, like from a publicist perspective. It's very valuable to know. So yeah, just, you know, build the relationships, know how to write a pitch, know what to include, all of that. That's kind of your foundational steps for doing your own campaign. But beyond that, and like you said, beyond the mailing list or the social media, I do think it goes just all the way back to engagement. And of course, some of that comes from, you know, your mailing list or your social media, but it also goes to your live shows and it goes to the merch you put out. Like, everything should be a part of your brand. Everything should be telling a story. Everything should be bringing you closer to your fans. So, you know, think about merch. I keep bringing up merch because it's an area that I see bands get really lazy about, where they just put out a t-shirt and they call it a day, and they charge $20 and nobody's paying $20 for these like oversized shirts that don't fit and have like one word on them. It's awful. And especially like as a female, I never find shirts that I actually want to wear, you know? So yeah. it's tough. So, I mean, go beyond that, you know, like do something. There was this, I did this whole article on bands doing merch correctly. And one of them I remember was this UK folk band that made and put out their own blend of tea. And it was like so perfect for what they were, you know?
That's so gorgeous.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. It just, it was so perfect. And I had this other band that I worked with that they were a character band out of San Francisco. And so instead of physical releases, they put together a comic book of their characters and what they were doing, and okay. they hand numbered them. So yeah, so like doing things like that where it's thinking outside the box, and it gives you something to bond with your fans. Like that's how you build presence. That's how you do your own PR. And that's the kind of thing you need to be doing to stand out and to build and nurture those relationships.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. That's great advice. Thank you. So the next question comes from Reed, and he's actually in the process of making a feature film. And he's saying, as it's just me, I've come to the conclusion that I can only do so much. Can't we all? I can't maintain a Facebook page, Twitter page, Instagram account, etc., all of it. What's the best way to maximize building a following with limited time and resources?
So this answer is going to sound kind of harsh, but it's the truth, which is you need to figure out how to do it. You know, like something has to give. If you don't have time, you need to use your resources and vice versa. So, you know, obviously there needs to be delegation somewhere. And, you know, being a business owner, I totally get it. You know, especially in those early days when I was like first starting out and I was afraid to hire interns or like anyone else. It was very much me doing all of the things while trying to run and operate, and like, so I get it. But the reality is that it's not sustainable to do that. So you really have two options, which is either to hire out, and you can hire someone to do your social media. I would hire someone to help you figure out your brand and like what to do on social media. But I think as far as crafting the actual posts, that should probably be you, at least for, you know, while you're still growing. Mm-hmm. And then the other option, which is not really an option in my mind, is to just, you have to find the time to do it. I don't know this person's particular situation, but I know that I work with a lot of artists that say that they don't have time for things. And what that really means is like, I've just handled my time poorly, you know, which is not quite the same thing. So what I always suggest doing to get around that is to schedule out a specific time once a week where you're going to schedule out your posts. I think that scheduling things out is a lot easier than just trying to remember on a daily basis, like, oh, I have to post on Instagram and oh, I have to post on Twitter, because that does feel overwhelming. Mm-hmm. But I think if you say, okay, every Sunday night for an hour, I'm sitting down and I am scheduling out these posts, and then it's done. And then if during the week I want to add something, I can, but I don't have to. I think sitting down like once a week and just scheduling those posts out, like that's the best thing you can do, because it only takes maybe probably an hour, maybe two while you get used to it. And everyone has 2 hours a week that they can dedicate to their career. So that would be my suggestion.
Yeah. And would you suggest using things like social media auto posters? So like once you've got the content plan,
yeah,
you can just load it there and just hit go, and you know that it's going to get posted.
Yeah, I would just be careful what you're using it for. So like, you know, Hootsuite or TweetDeck is great for Twitter, of course. And you can also do Instagram. I also used to use I don't know if I'm saying this right, Planoply, Planoply for Instagram scheduling, okay, which is kind of fun because you can also see it in a grid format. So if you're going for a certain like aesthetic, it helps. And it's the same thing as Hootsuite, where it like it sends you a push notification. So you do have to still do it every day. There's nothing to auto post yet, but it's certainly better than having to sit there and craft it. Yeah. And then for Facebook, I would use Facebook's own scheduling tool. What I don't think anyone should ever do is, for instance, post directly from Instagram to Facebook or something. It just looks sloppy the way that it posts. Yeah. But yeah, use Facebook's scheduler, and then use Hootsuite for Twitter and Instagram, and you're golden. That's cool. It.
Yeah, that's really good advice. Yeah, my head started to spin when I just kept realizing like multiple people across multiple different platforms were saying, you have to be kind of everywhere, and especially Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. And I remember when I first started to absorb that information, I was just like, it's impossible. I can't do it. I don't have the time. But as you say, once you have your brand really clear and you know the message that you want to be putting out, you can, in a matter of an hour or two a week, just be like, duck, 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 duck. There you go, done. And it's not as time consuming as you think it is.
Yeah, it's just having a plan, right? Yeah. So like, if you know that at the beginning of the week you have to get these five things done this week, then you can maybe even break it down into days. You know, oh well, I'm busy all day Wednesday and I'm busy Monday, so I guess I have these days. Where does it fit in? And just having a plan, I think where the trouble comes in is people trying to, like, refusing to plan for some reason, or not even thinking they need to plan, and then wondering why they don't have time. And it's like, well, because you didn't plan. So I think it's just having that structure and getting comfortable with following it. I know that's not natural for everyone. That is very natural for me. I feel very uncomfortable when there's not a plan in place. So it's like a natural. Yeah, exactly. But it's helpful. I mean, and it's so simple. Just sit down, make the plan, follow it. And it's less anxiety inducing that way, I think.
Yeah, totally. I totally agree with you. And then we have a question from Tanya, she's an illustrator. And she says, as an illustrator, do you have any tips on how I can be more attractive to PR agents to get represented? As with Reed, I am struggling to manage social media entirely by myself and would appreciate any advice on how to grow my network on Twitter in particular.
I think with the question of attracting publicists, I think, again, it just goes back to what I was saying before, as far as, you know, finding somebody that, especially as an illustrator, right? With music, for me, it's about finding music that I like. So it's about finding somebody that likes her work, enjoys it, they're vibing together. I mean, it's just, I would advise finding publicists that you think you could work with, send them emails. Don't be afraid to send them a follow-up in a couple days, and just go from there. I mean, if you have your heart set on one or two, definitely target them, but you should also be reaching out to more, because it's beneficial. And you don't know, maybe the person you had your heart set on, you know, does answer your email, but it's not the right fit. You're just not feeling it. And then this other person who you didn't even think of emailing initially is like the perfect fit. So just send these emails out, get a feel. It'll be good practice for you anyway to like talk to these people, and figure out what you want in a team member.
Yeah.
For building your audience on Twitter, I think one of the most valuable things with Twitter is that, like Instagram, you have access to everybody, you know, like on Facebook, you have to just wait for people to come to you, but on Twitter, you can just target whoever you want.
Yeah.
So that's what I would do. I mean, I would suggest, and this is going to sound daunting, but I know it's extremely effective, which is to sit down and figure out people you want to target. And just spend, even if it's only an hour a week, you know, or 10 minutes a day here and there, go on their page. Like, don't just favorite something, respond to them, start a conversation.
Yeah. Yeah.
And if you don't even know who you want to target, I always suggest, so in her case, she's an illustrator, right? So like, maybe go to another illustrator's Twitter that she really likes and respects, maybe the work's kind of similar, and then go see who's interacting with that person. And then go to that person's page and interact with them, because if they like this person's work, they're probably going to like your work too. And just kind of do that. I think that is very, very effective. It's time intensive, but you know that the people that you're attracting are more than likely going to be interested in what you're doing. So it's a good game plan, I think.
Yeah, I think that's really good advice on the Twitter front, because I remember when I was first starting out, people were like, yeah, just network on Twitter. I'm like, how? You know, like, who do I approach? How do I do this? You know, how do I find the people that want to find me? So yeah, that was really, really good detail in there. And the other thing I'll say to Tanya is, you know, how you and I met, Angela. You know, like I'd heard about you through kind of Steve and things that he was doing, and then I heard your interview on Dee's podcast, and I was like, she sounds so cool. I would love to work with her. So I popped you an email, you know, and I was just like, hey, you know, and you know, kind of the rest is history. So,
which this is a great time to bring up, that that goes back to personality and the fact that, like, the more you show your personality in your work and your social media and everything, the more people are likely to be attracted to that. And that's how you build connections.
Yeah,
for sure.
Totally. Yeah. Because I don't even think your interview with Dee was about PR.
No, it was just like, it was, I remember we went on, it was very personal. Like, we were just talking about very personal things the whole time.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. And I was just like, yeah, this is cool. We've got to reach out to her and just tell her she's awesome. Yeah, Tanya, don't be scared to, you know, reach out to people that you think you feel just intuitively that you'd resonate with. And, you know, I've seen Tanya's work. It's amazing. So for sure, when you start reaching out to people, I'd be very surprised if you didn't hear anything back. Yeah, just got to be brave, because it can be scary, you know, like initially taking that step to dip your toe into the big wide ocean, but it's rewarding when you do start taking those little leaps of faith.
And it's just practice. I mean, like, I remember it, I think it's really, this is not like new or novel advice, but just to do more of the thing that you're uncomfortable with. I mean, I certainly, when I first started Muddy Paw, and I still, like, this kind of thing is fine, but for some reason, phone calls, I guess because there's no body language, you can't read people, they make me crazy. Like, I, you know, so I would force myself to do X amount of calls a week until I got more comfortable. And now it's nothing. It's like not a big deal at all. So yeah, I mean, just, and it's even, I mean, I don't want to say it's easier, but I feel like it's less threatening on the internet because, you know, presumably these people you're reaching out to, they're probably pretty nice people anyway. And I can't tell you how many friends I've made from, like, networking, and now they're my closest friends. So
yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's a beautiful thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Have courage, Tanya. Growing, actually, just to kind of expand on what you were saying, Angela, about how to grow Tanya's network on Twitter. It is an amazing place to grow your audience. And, you know, if you're just, like, popping people, you know, non-intrusive conversational messages, you know, like, a really good piece of advice that I got given in terms of how to network on Twitter is just, like, just approach it like you were approaching somebody in a bar. You know, you wouldn't go like, hi, I'm Liz, do you want to listen to my music? Hey, how are you? You know, this is what I'm about, you know, and you'd engage in a conversation. You know, you're not kind of, it's not about ramming your stuff down people's throats, which is going back to the whole thing about forming a relationship. And I think that's probably why people find the whole kind of thing about online networking so daunting, because it's like, I've got to give this thing to this person, I've got to make them listen to it, or, like, see it, or watch it, or read it, or, you know, whatever. But actually, if you approach it with just getting to know that person, you know, and getting to know what they're about and engaging in a conversation with them, then you'll find that things flow a lot easier.
Well, yeah, it's like what you said again about the, you know, friendship. I mean, if you're trying to make friends with somebody, or even if you were friends with somebody, you would never just be like, oh, me, here, listen to my stuff, what can you do for me? I mean, they wouldn't be your friend very long. They would be so bored with it. Exactly. And so it's exactly the same with relationship building. You know, you should always be giving more than you're taking. Always listen more than you talk. Ask them about them. I remember reading in, I forget what book it was, but it was probably How to Win Friends and Influence People. But, and it was, like, very accurate, because it was basically like, if you talk to somebody and you let them do the majority of the talking, then they're going to almost certainly come away from that conversation feeling closer to you, even if they've learned nothing about you, because they feel connected because you've let them talk. And that very much applies to relationship building in this industry as well.
So true. So true. I think almost the desperation of wanting to get ourselves out there, or wanting to make that connection, almost without really realizing it, we dehumanize the person that we're trying to make the connection with.
Yeah.
You know, and yeah, we don't, that can make us approach things in completely the wrong manner and burn the bridge even before it's been built. Totally unintentionally. You know, you might be the nicest person in the world, but just forgetting that you're dealing with another human being can lead you to slip up.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing, right? It is another person. It's another human being. It's not a dollar sign. It's not a like number. It's a person.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. When I'm reaching out to people, I just try to talk to them how I would like to be spoken to myself, you know, and and often, you know, things just, people, if you're nice to people, they'll be like, say, hey, what do you do? You know, and you know, when I say, oh yeah, I make music, they're like, wow, can I listen to your stuff? And because you've already made that connection, you know, then I send it to them, they're like, wow, I love it, it's amazing. And, you know, and it's just like, oh cool, thanks so much for listening, you know? And then they just want more. So
because you're not pressuring them.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, take the pressure off and let things flow naturally.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Okay, so Roberto, this is actually the final question from the Dreamers. He's saying, he's a comedian and he posts up really funny vents just about, you know, different topics. So he's saying, I constantly vent about how people compliment my integrity, work ethic, and ability, but no one steps up to be a more sustained patron / sponsor / benefactor. I even say that Michelangelo had Lorenzo Medici. Where is mine? Not just someone ad hoc. Any thoughts about how to reach the people with big money and how to get them to invest in you?
Do comedians look for investors? Is that like a thing that I didn't know
I'm
about?
Not sure, but I guess it's every artist's dream to have a rich patron that kind of funds them.
Yeah, no kidding, right? If you're not already, I would certainly be clear about, if you're not already, I would be clear about what it is you want sponsorship for. It's one thing to say I'm looking for someone to sponsor me, and it's another to be like, I'm looking for somebody to sponsor this microphone or the, I don't know what comedians like. Like to be very specific, like a band would with like a drum kit or whatever. As far as reaching those people, I mean, once again, I'm going back to relationship building. It's just about the relationships you build. Don't be afraid to ask for introductions. Certainly, like even if you may not necessarily recognize that the people you are building relationships with have an effect on the people you want to build relationships with. So like you may think, okay, I have these relationships, but how are they going to serve me? Cause none of them are investors. Well, maybe they know somebody that's an investor or they know somebody who knows somebody, like you don't know. So I would kind of look around, see what your current network looks like, see who they might have connections with, and don't be afraid to ask for intros, but also start to like target the people that you want to get in front of. Mm. And when you're doing that, I'm not sure if I've already said this. I actually don't think I have, but it's very important, which is to be genuine. Again, I guess this goes back to like, you know, listening more than you speak and all of that. In your approach, you know, I guess it depends on the person you're looking, the person you're approaching. But I know for me, although I'm not ever giving money to anybody, it's the more personal approach is better, you know, and this might be different. Like a sponsorship person, somebody who's looking to give money might want a more direct approach. Like, here's who I am, here's what I'm looking for. But my instinct is to say, especially because this is a creative space, that you do well to know a lot about the person, compliment them, tell them exactly what you respect about them, why their sponsorship means so much. And then don't go right to like, so can I get your money? Can I hop on a call? Can I buy you a coffee? Basically, can I do X for you? And that will further along the conversation. But again, it's the reason it's called building a relationship is because it is building a relationship. It's not just asking, get what you want, you know? That would be my approach.
Yeah.
Although my knowledge in sponsorship is very limited. But I don't think it's that different than how you approach other people in any given industry.
For sure. And the one thing that I'd add to that, Roberto, is, you know, you're a comedian, you have footage, and like everyone is on YouTube now. It's like, it's the place to go. Everyone's hanging out on there. And so, you know, put your stuff off on YouTube and put, you know, put your YouTube channel in front of people. So like reach out to bloggers and, you know, even podcasts that, you know, specialize in comedy, Facebook pages, Facebook groups, you know, start forming relationships with the people that run these spaces. And, you know, over time, eventually you might be given the opportunity to put your stuff in front of their audience, you know, thereby increasing your audience basically. And if you've got a really strong body of work on YouTube, those people can go there and become your subscribers. And if you're interacting with them when they're commenting on your videos and building up relationships through there, you can also have, when you've got enough kind of subscribers, have somewhere where they can go to subscribe to your newsletter and, you know, carry on nurturing the relationship there. And then, you know, once you've built things up even more, then you can maybe launch a Patreon page for yourself, you know, and things like that. And, you know, like I've been like following loads of independent artists, creators, you know, from a group of people that are sailing around the world in a sailboat to, you know, musicians, to people that run like scientific knowledge channels. And, you know, like they've just been really consistent, delivering amazing content to people and slowly growing their audience by kind of networking with bloggers and website owners and podcast hosts and Facebook pages and Facebook groups. There's so many places where you can like reach out to. It's amazing. And there's so much opportunity. You know, and over time, as they've been getting featured in more and more places, they've just been reaching, you know, tens of thousands of people at a time. And, you know, on some occasions their channel has grown like by 10,000 subscribers overnight when they get featured on the right blog and get put in front of a big group of people that are like, oh my God, I love these guys. And that's when the magic starts to happen. And that's when, you know, you probably will find your not just one magic patron, but several who are crazy about your stuff, crazy about you, and are like, how do I support this guy?
Well, yeah, and that's exactly right. I mean, you bring up a really good point. And if it is, if you're talking about exclusively something like, you know, Patreon, where, you know, fans can come and donate a certain amount of money for whatever per month. I think that my inclination would be to say that if it's something like that and you're not getting the support that you want, then your problem is not necessarily that you just like haven't landed in front of the right people, as far as like big money, but it's probably a branding problem. It's probably a relationship with your fans problem, because the reality is that like if your relationship is very strong with those people, if your fans are feeling that connection to you, then not only are they going to support you, but they're going to be talking about you to everyone else. So I would kind of look back and at everything we've talked about today and see like, am I doing these things for relationship building? Am I building these connections with fans? Because I feel like that's probably where you're running into trouble. And again, I think that's a case of like overlooking the obvious but difficult part, you know, of work, and trying to skip right ahead. And that's not the problem. Yeah. I always really like to throw out this band that I've worked a couple PR campaigns with called Shadow of Wales. They are amazing at social media and at their fan building abilities. Like their fans are just insane. They're always like making memes for the band and like tweeting about them and tweeting them out. And so, I mean, especially on Twitter, and they have like a private Facebook group for them. So if you're kind of stuck at all on like, and you want to see a small emerging indie band that's doing that stuff really, really well, I would check out Shadow of Wales because they do it better than anyone else I know in that space.
It's a cool name for a band.
Yeah.
So that's brilliant. Thank you so much for that. I think that's about a wrap. Thanks so much for taking the time out to come in and chat to us about various PR topics. It's been a real pleasure chatting to you.
Yeah, thank you so much for the opportunity.
You're so welcome.
Thanks so much for listening. It's my pleasure to be able to bring you guests who are experts in their field to help you continue walking the path of your dreams. hope you enjoyed the show. I'd love to know what you thought of it. So please do remember to subscribe in iTunes and give us a little rate and review. If the show resonated with you, please share it with someone you think would benefit from it. If you have a question or topic you'd like answered on the podcast, head to lizcirelli.com/contact and pop me a message. If you'd like to join my coaching community, Daydream Believers, and connect with me on a deeper level, you can become a patron. Just head to patreon.com/lizcirelli, where you can sign up quickly and easily. As a patron, you'll get access to the full range of my coaching packages, plus you'll get exclusive early access to all of my musical output.